It took almost 5 weeks for Lothar to make his preparations and then trek back to that remote waterhole below the Kunene River, where he had cut the spur of his quarry. There was still water in the pan. It was amazing how long those shallow, unshaded basins retained water, even in the sweltering desert conditions, and Lothar wondered, as he had before, if there wasn't some subterranean seepage from the rivers in the north that found its way into them. In any event, the fact that there was still surface water boded well for their chances of being able to penetrate deeper eastwards, the direction which the long-dead spur had taken. While his men were refilling the water barrels from the waterhole, Lothar strolled around the periphery of the circular pan, and there, incredibly, was the girl's footprint still preserved in the clay, just as he had last seen it. He knelt beside it, and with his finger traced out the shape of the small, graceful foot. The cast was baked by the sun, as hard as a brick. Though all around it the mud had been trampled by buffalo and rhinoceros and elephant, this single print remained. "It's an omen," he told himself, and then chuckled cynically. "I've never believed in omens. Why would I begin now?" Yet his mood was buoyant and optimistic when he assembled his men around the campfire that evening. Apart from the camp servants and the wagoners, he had 4 mounted riflemen to help him conduct the actual search. All 4 of them had been with him since the days of the rebellion. They had fought and bled together, shared a looted bottle of Cape Smoke or a woolen blanket on a frosty desert night, or the last shreds of tobacco in the pouch, and he loved them a little, though he trusted them not at all. There was Swart Hendrik, or Black Henry, the tall, purplish-black Avumbo, and Klein Boy, or Little Boy, his bastard son by a Herero woman. There was Fark Jan, or Pig John, the wrinkled yellow Khoisan, mixed blood of Nama and Berh Dama, and even of the true San Ran in his veins, for his grandmother had been a Bushman slave, captured as a child on one of the great commando raids of the last century that the Boers had ridden against the San people. Lastly, there was Feil Lipper, the Bondelswart Hottentot, with lips like fresh-cut liver, and a vocabulary that gave him his name, Dirty Lips. "My hunting pack," Lothar smiled, half affectionately, and half in revulsion as he looked them over. Truly the term outlaw had meaning when applied to them. They were beyond the rules of tribe or tradition. He studied their faces in the firelight. "Like half-tamed wolves, they would turn and savage me at the first sign of weakness," he thought. "All right, you sons of the great hyena, listen to me. We are looking for San, the little yellow killers." Their eyes sparkled. "We are looking for the white girl they had as their captive, and there are 100 gold sovereigns for the man who cuts her spur. This is how we will conduct the hunt." Lothar smoothed the sand between his feet and then traced out the plan for them with a twig. "The wagons will follow the line of the waterholes, here and here, and we will fan out like this and like this. Between us we can sweep 50 miles of country." So they rode into the east, as he had planned it. And within the first 10 days they cut the spur of a small party of wild San. Lothar called in his outriders, and they followed up the trail of tiny, childlike footprints. They moved with extreme caution, carefully spying out the terrain ahead through Lothar's telescope and skirting each stand where an ambush could be laid. The idea of a poisoned bone arrowhead burying itself in his flesh made Lothar shudder every time he let himself think about it. Bullets and bayonets were the tools of his trade, but the filthy poisons of these little pygmies brewed unmanned him, and he hated them more each hot, tortuous, nerve-wracking mile that they followed the spur. Reading the sign, Lothar learned that there were 8 San in the party they were following, 2 adult males and 2 women, probably their wives. There were also four small children, two still at the breast and two just old enough to walk on their own. "The children will slow them down," Farkyan gloated. "They will not be able to stand the pace." "I want one of them alive," Lothar warned them. "I want to know about the girl." Farkyan's slave grandmother had taught him enough of the San language to interrogate a captive, and he grinned. "Catch one of them and I will make him talk, be sure of that." The San were hunting and foraging, and Lothar's band gained on them rapidly. They were only an hour behind them when the San, with their animal perceptions, sensed their presence. Lothar found the spots where they had become aware, the spot where the trail seemed to vanish. "They're anti-tracking," he growled. "Get down and search," he ordered. "They're carrying the children." Farkyung squatted to examine the earth. "The babies are too young to cover their own spoor. The women are carrying them, but they will tire quickly under their load." Though the trail seemed to end and the ground beyond seemed unmarked even to Lothar's experienced eye, yet even the San had left sign that Farkyan and Swart Hendrik could follow. The pace was slower, for they had to dismount to be closer to the earth, but still they followed, and within 4 hours Swart Hendrik nodded and grinned. "The women are tiring quickly. They are leaving better sign and moving slower. We are gaining on them now." Far ahead, the San women, toiling under the weight of the children, looked back and wailed softly. The following horses showed across the plain, magnified by the mirage, until they loomed like monsters, but even the sight of their pursuers could not drive the women on at a better speed.
"So I must play the plover," said the oldest of the San hunters.
He was referring to the way the plover feigns injury to lead a predator away from its nest.
"If I can make them follow me, I may be able to burn up their horses with thirst," he told his clan. "Then when you reach the next waterhole, and after you have drunk and filled the water eggs..."
He proffered a sealed buckhorn container to his wife, and he did not have to say the fateful words. Poisoning a waterhole was such a desperate deed that none of them wanted to talk of it.
"If you can kill the horses, you will be safe," the hunter told him. "I will try to give you time to do it."
The old San hunter went quickly to each of the children and touched their eyelids and lips in blessing and farewell, and they stared at him solemnly. When he went to his woman who had borne him 2 sons, she gave a short, keening wail. He admonished her with a glance which told her clearly, "Show no fear in front of the little ones." Then, as he shed his clothing and his leather satchel, the old San whispered to the younger man, his companion in 1,000 hunts,
"Be a father to my sons."
He handed his satchel to him and stepped back.
"Now go."
While he watched his clan trot away, the old man restrung his little bow and then carefully unwound the strips of leather that protected the heads of his arrows. His family disappeared across the plain, and he turned his back upon them and went to meet his pursuers. Lothar was fretting at the pace. Though he knew that the quarry was only an hour ahead, they had lost the spoor again and were held up, while his flanks cast forward to pick it up. They were in open country, a flat plain that stretched away to an indeterminate meeting with the sky. The plain was dotted with dark clumps of low scrub, and the mirage made them dance and squirm in the field of the telescope. It would be impossible to pick out a human figure amongst them at more than a mile distance. The horses were almost knocked up. They had to have water soon. Within the next hour, he would have to call off the pursuit and turn back to the water wagon. He lifted the telescope again, but a wild shout made him start and glance around. Swart Hendrik was pointing out to the left. The man on the extreme left flank, Fail Lipper, The Bondelswart was trying to control his mount. It was rearing and walking on its hind legs, dragging him with it in a sheet of flying dust. Lothar had heard that a horse would react to the hot scent of a wild bushman as though to that of a lion, but he had doubted it. Fail Lipper was helpless, both hands on the reins, his rifle in the boot on the saddle, and as Lothar watched, he was dragged over one of the salt bushes and sprawled in the dirt. Then, quite miraculously, another human shape seemed to appear out of the very earth. The tiny, naked, pixie-like shape stood up only 20 paces beyond the dragging rider. Unlikely as it seemed, he must have been completely concealed behind a clump of scrub that should not have hidden a hare. As Lothar watched with helpless horror, the little mannequin drew his bow and let fly. Lothar saw the flight of the arrow, like a dust mote in the sunlight, and then the naked bushman whirled and trotted directly away from the line of horsemen. Lothar's men were all shouting and struggling to remount, but terror seemed to have infected the horses, and they pranced and circled. Lothar was the first up. He did not touch the stirrups, but with a hand on his horse's withers, sprang into the saddle, turned its head, and galloped down the line. Already the running bushman was disappearing amongst the low, mirage-shrouded scrub, in a swinging trot that carried him away at an incredible rate. The man he had fired at had let his horse run free and had pulled himself to his feet. He stood with his legs braced apart, swaying slightly from side to side. "Are you all right?" Lothar shouted as he rode up. And then he saw the arrow. It dangled down Fail Lipper's chest, but the arrowhead was buried in his cheek, and he stared up at Lothar with a bewildered expression. Lothar jumped down and caught him by the shoulders.
"I'm a dead man," Lipper said softly, his hands hanging by his sides.
And Lothar seized the dangling arrow and tried to pull it free. The flesh of Lipper's cheek was drawn out in a peak, and he screamed and staggered. Gritting his teeth, Lothar heaved again, but this time the frail reed shaft snapped, leaving the bone arrowhead embedded in the man's flesh, and he began to struggle. Lothar seized a handful of his greasy black hair and twisted his head over to examine the wound.
"Keep still, damn you!"
A short length of bone protruded from the wound. It was caked with a black, rubbery coating.
"Euphorbia latex."
Lothar had examined San weapons before. His father had once possessed an important collection of tribal artifacts. Now Lothar recognized the poison, the distilled latex from the roots of one of the rare desert euphorbia plants. Even as he studied it, he could see the poison spreading beneath the skin, discoloring it a deep lavender purple, blooming like crystals of permanganate of potash dropped into water, following the course of the shallow blood vessels as it was absorbed.
"How long?"
Lipper's tortured eyes held Lothar's, beseeching comfort. The latex looked freshly distilled, none of its virulence dissipated, but Fail Lipper was big and strong and healthy. His body would fight the toxin. It would take time, a few dreadful hours that would seem like eternity.
"Can't you cut it out?" Lipper pleaded.
"It's gone deep. You'd bleed to death."
"Burn it out.
The pain would kill you."
Lothar helped him down into a sitting position just as Hendrik rode up with the bunch.
"Two men to stay to look after him," Lothar ordered. "Hendrik, you and I will go after the little yellow swine."
They pushed the tired horses, and within 20 minutes they saw the bushman ahead of them. He seemed to dissolve and dance in the heat mirage, and Lothar felt a dark rage seize him, the kind of hatred a man can only feel towards something he fears in the deep places of his soul.
"Go right!"
Lothar waved Hendrik over. "Hit him off if he turns."
and they spurred forward, riding down swiftly on the fleeing figure.
"I'll give you a death to wipe out the other," Lothar promised grimly, as he loosened his blanket roll from the pommel in front of him.
The sheepskin that he used as a mattress would shield him from the frail bone-tipped arrows. He wrapped it around his torso and tucked the end over his mouth and nose. He pulled his wide-brimmed hat low, leaving only a slit for his eyes. The running bushman was 200 yards ahead. He was naked, except for the bow in one hand and the halo of tiny arrows in the leather thong around his head. His body shone with a coating of sweat, and it was the colour of bright amber, almost translucent in the sunlight. He ran lightly as a gazelle. His small, neat feet seemed to skim the earth. There was the crack of a Mauser, and a bullet kicked a fountain of pale dust just beyond the running bushman, like the spout of a sperm whale. And the bushman jerked and then, unbelievably, increased the speed of his flight, drawing away from the two galloping horsemen. Lothar glanced across at Hendrik. He was riding with a loose rein, using both hands to reload the Mauser.
"Don't shoot!" Lothar yelled angrily. "I want him alive!"
And Hendrik lowered the Mauser. For another mile, the bushman kept up that last wild spring. Then gradually, he faltered. Once again, they began to overhaul him. Lothar saw his legs begin to wobble under him, his feet flopping from the ankles with exhaustion. But Lothar's mount was almost blown. It was lathering heavily, and froth splattered his boots as he drove it forward. 50 yards ahead, the exhausted bushman spun round to face him, standing at bay, his chest pumping like a bellows, and sweat dripping from his small, spade-shaped beard. His eyes were wild and fierce and defiant as he fitted an arrow to the bow.
"Come on, you little monster!" Lothar yelled, to draw the bushman's aim from the horse to himself, and the ruse succeeded.
The bushman threw up the bow and drew and loosed in a single movement, and the arrow flew like a beam of light. It struck Lothar at the level of the throat, but the thick wool of the sheepskin smothered it, and it fell away, tapping against his riding boot and falling to the dry earth. The bushman was trying desperately to notch another arrow as Lothar leaned out of the saddle like a polo player reaching for a forehand drive and swung the Mauser. The rifle barrel crunched into the side of the bushman's skull above the ear, and he collapsed. Lothar reined down his horse and sprang from the saddle, but Hendrik was there before him, swinging wildly with his Mauser butt at the bushman's head as he lay against the earth. Lothar grabbed his shoulder and pushed him away with such force that he staggered and almost fell.
"Alive, I told you,"
Lothar snarled, and went down on his knees beside the sprawling body. There was a sluggish trickle of blood out of the bushman's ear hole, and Lothar felt a prickle of concern as he felt for the pulse of the carotid artery in the throat, and then grunted with relief. He picked up the tiny bow and snapped it in his hands and threw the pieces aside. Then with his hunting knife he cut the leather thong around the bushman's forehead and one at a time broke the poisoned arrowheads from their shafts and, handling them with extreme care, threw them as far from him as he could. As he rolled the bushman onto his belly, he shouted at Hendrik to bring the leather thongs from his saddlebag. He trussed the captive securely, surprised at his perfect muscular development and at the graceful little feet and hands. He knotted the leather thongs at wrist and elbow and at knee and ankle and pulled the knot so tight that they bit deeply into the bright amber skin. Then he picked up the bushman in one hand as though he were a doll and slung him over the saddle. The movement revived the bushman, and he lifted his head and opened his eyes. They were the colour of new honey, and the whites were smoky yellow. It was like looking into the eyes of a trapped leopard, so ferocious that Lothar stepped back involuntarily.
"They are animals," he said, and Hendrik nodded. "Worse than animals,
They have the cunning of a man without being human." Lothar took the reins and led his exhausted steed back to where they had left the wounded Fail-Lipper. The others had rolled him in a grey woolen blanket and laid him on a sheepskin. Clearly they were waiting on Lothar to attend to him, but Lothar was reluctant to involve himself. He knew that Fail-Lipper was beyond any help he could give, and he put off the moment by dragging the bound bushman out of the saddle and dropping him on the sandy earth. The little body curled up defensively, and Lothar hobbled his horse and went slowly to join the circle around the blanket-wrapped form. He could see immediately that the poison was acting swiftly. One side of Lipper's face was grotesquely swollen and laced with furious purple lines. One eye was closed by the swelling, and the lid looked like an overripe grape, shining and black. The other eye was wide open, but the pupil was shrunken to a pinprick. He made no sign of recognition, as Lothar stooped over him and had probably already lost his sight. He was breathing with extreme difficulty, fighting wildly for each breath as the poison paralyzed his lungs. Lothar touched his forehead, and the skin was cold and clammy as that of a reptile. Lothar knew that Hendrik and the others were watching him. On many occasions they had seen him dress a bullet wound, set a broken leg, draw a rotten, aching tooth, and perform all manner of minor surgery. They were waiting for him to do something for the dying man. And their expectations and his own helplessness infuriated Lothar. Suddenly, Lipper uttered a strangled cry and began to shake like an epileptic. His single open eye rolled back into his skull, showing the yellow bloodshot white, and his body arched under the blanket. "Convulsions," said Lothar, "like a mamba bite. It won't be long now." The dying man bit down, grinding his teeth together, and his swollen, protruding tongue was caught between them. He chewed on his tongue, mincing it to ribbons, while Lothar tried desperately and futilely to prise his jaws open, and the blood poured down the Hottentot's own throat into his semi-paralyzed lungs, and he choked and moaned through his locked jaws. His body arched in another rigid convulsion, and there was a spluttering explosion beneath the blanket as his racked body voided itself. The sweet fecal stench was nauseating in the heat. It was a long, drawn-out and messy death, and when it was over at last, it left even those hardened men shaken and morose. They scraped a shallow grave and rolled Fail-Lipper's corpse, still in the soiled grey blanket, into it. Then they hastily covered it, as though to be rid of their own loathing and horror. One of them built a small fire of brush twigs and brewed a canteen of coffee. Lothar fetched the half-bottle of Cape brandy from his saddlebag. As they passed it from hand to hand, they avoided looking at where the bushman lay curled naked in the sand. They drank the coffee in silence, squatting in a circle, and then Farkyan, the Khoisan Hottentot who spoke the San language, flicked his coffee grounds onto the fire and stood up. He crossed to where the San lay and picked him up by his bound wrists, forcing his arms high behind him as they bore his full weight. He carried him back to the fire and picked out a burning twig. Still holding the San dangling from one hand, he touched the naked glands of his penis with the glowing tip of the twig. The San gasped and wriggled wildly, and a blister formed miraculously on the skin of his genitals. It looked like a soft silver slug. The men around the fire laughed, and in their laughter was the sound of their loathing and their terror of the death by poison, and their sorrow for their companion, of their craving for vengeance, and the sadistic need to inflict pain and humiliation, the worst that they could devise. Lothar felt himself shaken by the quality of that laughter, felt the insecure foundations of his humanity totter, and the same animal passions arise in him. With a supreme effort, he forced them back. He rose to his feet. He knew that he could not prevent what was about to happen, just as you cannot drive hungry lions from their fresh kill. They would turn on him if he tried. He averted his eyes from the bushman's face, from those wild, hunted eyes. It was clear that he knew that death awaited him, but even he could not guess at the manner of it. Instead, Lothar looked at the faces of his own men, and he felt sickened and soiled by what he saw. Their features seemed distorted, as though seen through a poorly glazed window, thickened and smeared with lust. He thought that after the bushman had been mounted by each of them in turn, ravished as though he were a woman, he would probably welcome what awaited him at the very end. So, Lothar tried to keep his expression neutral, but his voice was hoarse with disgust. I am returning to the wagons now. The Sen is yours, but I must know if he has seen or has heard of the white girl. He must answer that one question, that is all. Lothar went to his horse and mounted. He rode away towards the wagons without looking back. Just once, far behind, he heard a cry of such outrage and agony that it made his skin prickle. But then it was muted and lost on the moan of the desert wind. Much later, when his men rode up to the wagons, Lothar was lying under the side awning of his living wagon, reading his faithful old copy of Goethe by the light of a hurricane lantern. Stained and battered, it had sustained him 100 times before when the substance of his being had been drawn thin. The laughter of his men as they dismounted and unsaddled had a fat, satisfied sound, like that of men who had well feasted and drunk and were replete. Swart Hendrik came to where he lay, swaggering as though he had taken wine, and the front of his breeches was speckled with black drops of dried blood. The Sen had not seen a white woman, but there was something strange and unexplained that he had heard whispered at the fire when they met other Sen in the desert, a tale of a woman and a child from a strange land where the sun never shines, who lived with two old people of the Sen. Lothar came up on his elbow. He remembered the two little bushmen he had seen with the girl. Where? Did he say where? He demanded eagerly. There is a place deep in the Kalahari that is sacred to all the Sen. He gave us the direction. Where, Hendrik, damn you, where? A long journey, 15 days of that travel. What is the place? How will we know it? That, Hendrik admitted sadly, he did not say. His will to stay alive was not as great as we thought it might be. He died before he could tell us. Tomorrow we will turn in that direction, Lothar ordered. There are the other Sen that we lost today. With fresh horses we might catch them before sundown tomorrow. They have women with them. No! Lothar snarled at him. We go on towards the sacred place in the wilderness.